Okay. The shame of Shmuel in Parshas Vayishlach. Yaakov, begins the parsha, sends a message to Esav. And the Chazal, the sages, are critical. They say Hashem already told him he's going to protect him, and you don't have to start up with Esav. So we don't really understand why. Why did he? Usually if you're under the radar screen, stay under the radar screen. Why do you have to send a message to him and that arouses his right away? It's a question. Maybe he's going to attack him, and that's exactly what seemed to be going on. That's one question. Another one is that Rashi says in the pasuk a funny word, Vayishlach Yaakov Malachim L'fonav El Esav. Now, sometimes in Tanakh, Malachim, Malach means a messenger. But sometimes Malach means a real angel. So Rashi says that the Chazal interpreted this that he was using angels, because Yaakov met angels on his way back. The last few psukim, the last week, Sedra, he had angels of Chutz La'aretz, angels of Israel with him. So he had these angels go to Esav. It's also funny. Why would he want to send angels? Okay. So, says his father said that basically to answer both questions is that Yaakov had a different idea. Yaakov wasn't trying to, do some strategy to placate Esav, placate him so that he won't attack him. It wasn't that. It was Yaakov. Yaakov was basically trying to get Esav to do tshuva. So he thought that somehow he could get him to do tshuva. Why? Why would Yaakov think that he had some power with these angels to get Esav to do tshuva more than Yitzchak and Rivka? Esav lived with Yitzchak and Rivka his whole life. He became Esav. He had this split personality, part good and part evil. And however he worked it out, he rationalized it that when he's with Yitzchak, he had like this the two compartmental philosophy, that in some parts of life you're supposed to be righteous, a tzaddik, and in other parts of life you're supposed to do whatever you can for yourself, and morality doesn't hold over there. You had like this, and a lot of people live that way. Most people in the world, where we, from what we see, have this compartmentalization. They put their good spirituality in one level, and otherwise they're living, selfish personal lives. So, and this he did with Yitzchak. So why would this be better that he's somehow exposed to Yaakov's spiritual world, and that would have more of an impact upon him than Yitzchak's spiritual world? Okay. So he has a very interesting discussion. It's a little bit long, but I think it's very interesting. He says, we have in our tradition, at least in the Kabbalistic traditions, mentioned in the Gemara a few times, but it's not the mainstream Gemara tradition, but it is the mainstream Kabbalistic tradition, that there will be two Mashiachim. There will be one Mashiach called Mashiach ben Yosef, and there will be another Mashiach called Mashiach ben David. The Mashiach ben Yosef is supposed to. Mashiach ben Yosef is supposed to get rid of the evil in the world, So it will be a conflict with Esav and the descendants of Esav and Ishmael and other nations which have a certain kind of evil. But then, once that's gotten rid of, then you have to go to the positive side of developing a very, very beautiful, pure, spiritual culture. That'll be Mashiach ben David. So the Mashiach ben Yosef is there to defeat the evil forces, and the Mashiach ben David is there to develop the good post the battle of Mashiach ben Yosef. There'll be the Mashiach ben David era. This is the Kabbalistic view of the Mashiach era. Right. Okay. Since the Mashiach ben Yosef will get rid of the Yetzer Hara, and then the Mashiach ben David will be able to bring people to higher spiritual levels. Okay. I mentioned this before, that the next time when you have the Mashiach, it's in order to give us a chance to do mitzvahs in a perfect way, which we're not able to do in this world, in this lifetime. This lifetime, we only achieve basic fulfillment of mitzvos, because we're always struggling against the evil side, and that makes it very hard to do perfect mitzvos. But when you have after the Mashiach ben David will come, so then we'll be able to do mitzvahs in a perfect way, because evil will have been eradicated. And that eradication of the evil, handicaps us, that's going to be Mashiach ben Yosef. Okay. That's the two stages. So everybody will become much more better, even tzaddikim will be a much higher level once there's a Mashiach ben David. Okay. So you can actually call the Mashiach ben Yosef as somebody who plows the world and gets the world ready. And the Mashiach ben David, he actually plants the world, harvests the crops. Okay. That's why Friday, Kabbalah, the sixth day Friday is Yosef, and the seventh day Shabbos is David, because the sixth day is the Hachana, gets you ready for Shabbos. The sixth day is a transition from the Chol to the Kodesh. You get to the Kodesh, so Yosef helps the transition. Yeah. And then you get the level of David on Shabbos. Okay. That the Medrash says that Vayihi shor v'chamor, he tells Esav, I have a shor and I have a chamor, and that's in this message. So the shor is Yosef, and the chamor is the Mashiach of David. Okay, he goes into this. Okay, now Esav, you know, as we said, he's a paradoxical personality. On the one side, he has this wicked side to him, but the other side, he has his righteous side to him. He is a mixed story. So Shem Shmuel says as follows. This is also a Kabbalistic concept. He says that in the future, in that first stage, which is getting rid of the evil, so it's going to be very much the evil which coming out from Esav in the world. But it doesn't mean that there will be a total destruction of the Esav. It just means that the evil of Esav will be eradicated. But then Esav will have the good side, which will remain. It's a chiddush in the Shem Shmuel, he says, because most people think that there'll be a complete eradication of Esav. He says, not true. He says there'll be a purge it. We'll purge the evil and the good will remain. Yes?
Is that also kind of supported by the idea that Esau's head was in Machpelah?
Yes. Yeah, that's supported by the Medrash, that Esau's head is in Machpelah. It means that's the good part of Esau. So that will have redemption. Okay. So he says that the evil angel, which we connect to Esau, will become a good angel. The Gemara identifies the Yetzer Hara with the Satan, with the angel of Esau. But that's only because that's the bad sign. But once it gets purged, it'll become a good angel. Okay. Okay, he brings all kinds of sources to prove his point, which sounds a little bit astonishing from a Jewish point of view, but he says that's, he has many proofs of that from different sources, and Medrash and so on. Okay, now, Yaakov, he says, when he comes back from Lavan, it's apparently ongoing theme in the Hasidus and the Kabbalah, that the great people, as they go through their lives, they come to a point, they think, you know, maybe because of the time of Mashiach has come. So Yaakov, he thought, he went through all of this, but he had to go through by Lavan. Now he's coming back with all his family and the blessings and wealth and everything seems great. So he says, now maybe now is the time, Taka, to reach out to Esau. And the original idea of our father Yitzchak was that we would have some kind of partnership and fix the world and have Mashiach come. Maybe now is the time to do that. That's why he sent his messengers to Esau. He thought that with all the levels that God had given him already, now maybe was the time to reach out to Esau, get him on board, and then they could together fix the world and bring Mashiach. That's a very interesting point. A lot of people would like to do that. So Yaakov was maybe the first of many who thought that you could bring Mashiach by reaching out to the other, to the adversaries. Okay. So he says of course that was a mistake because Esau wasn't ready for it. He says it was a good idea. If Yaakov would have succeeded, it would have really changed world history, obviously. Because we know, according to our tradition, Esau eventually becomes Edom, is Edom, which becomes Rome. And Rome destroyed the second base of Mikdash, and Rome then took over the world. And till today, basically the world has been run by the Roman culture, the Roman Empire and its descendants, the Europeans, then the Americans, the Russians. Even now, the rest of the world just adopted this whole Western culture, which is really the Roman culture, the Chinese, the Japanese, the Indians, everybody is following this culture of Rome, or the West, which is this mixed idea that on the one hand, you can have spirituality, do good things. And on the other hand, you could be very selfish and dominate and conquer and step on other people's. You know, it's like a mixed thing. And the idea of like separation of of areas. There's one area which is supposed to be spiritual and good, and there's another area where you're out for yourself and selfish, and you try to be conquer and so on. This is their culture. It's against the Torah, because the Torah doesn't want this kind of a division. The Torah wants everything to be uniform, that the physical material should be homogenized with the spiritual. That's our idea of mitzvot. That's why they dropped mitzvot. The Christians, which is the basic religion, and the Muslims, the basic religions of the West, they dropped mitzvot, because mitzvot means 24/7. Everything you do has spirituality, but they don't believe that. They believe it's only different areas. That's can't be universal. That's our big argument with them. Anyway, Yaakov thought that he could reach Esav. And if he would, he would fix the world. Okay. However, it didn't work. Why? Because part of Esav, he says, this is a good point, part of Esav is his pride. He has exceeding, he always thinks that he's always right. He has this gaiva. There's a certain gaiva. We see this in the culture of Rome and also in today, that there's a gaiva that the people, the culture says, we are right. Whatever we're saying, we're always right. They're not ready really to learn from us, because they too much. They have too much conceit. They're conceited. They don't. It's not really. At best, they'll tolerate Jews and Jewish philosophy, but they're not going to say something we can really learn from, because of their conceit. Because they have this idea that we know best. That's a very difficult. He says that's probably the most difficult. The Yetzer Hara. To overcome when someone is conceited, doesn't want to listen. It's very difficult. How do you get someone to listen if they think they're right? Someone like, say, Paro had a dream and he was confused. He says, let me speak to this Hebrew boy. He seems to know, so he'll explain. He wanted to learn. But if you don't want to, Esav didn't want to hear anything. So Yaakov thought, he'll send them real angels. Now, the real angel, as we said, he's null and void before Hashem. He's the absolute most humble of all creatures, the angel. The angel doesn't think he can do anything or think anything outside of what Hashem told him. So he has what you call this element of bitul hayesh, which we spoke about the other day.
Right.
No self-nullification. So if you send him an angel, maybe the angel could get him away from his conceit. Get a little bit humble, a little bit modest. He'll pick up from the angel some humility, and then he'll be able to listen to the message. That was the idea of Yaakov.
So going back to what we said yesterday, so is that we should strive to be like angels, or is that the difference between men and angels?
That's a great question. In fact, I just have an article which is going to be in the book, Shem Shmuel book. Certain areas we should be people where we do things and we express ourselves. In certain areas, you have to be like an angel, where we're absolutely humble and have humility and say, I just let Hashem take care of it. I can't take care of this. And it's hard to know what's what, when you should do what, when you should use the mid of yesh, that I am something and I should do things, and when should I be an ayin. I just let it ride, because it's beyond me. I'm like an angel. I let it ride. I'm humble. I have humility. I let Hashem take care of it. You have to figure this out as you go through life. Nowadays, I don't think it was always like this, but nowadays, most Jews' initial reaction to situations is, let me do something about it. But you have to have a second level that after I tried and it's not going, I have to be able to just step back and say, let Hashem, I'm giving this, it's not for me to deal with, it's Hashem. And like an angel, have humility. If you keep on over trying too much, it's going to be very bad. If you try to take control, when a certain situation Hashem wants you to be able to get control, so you should try and struggle and get the control. But sometimes Hashem doesn't want you to have control. He wants you to be humble and say, yeah, okay, it's Hashem's taking care of this. It's not for me. When you do the yesh, do things, when you do the ayin, I let it go with Hashem. When you do hishtadlus, when you have betachon, that's not a clear, there's no clear rule. Depends on the person, depends on your culture, depends on how you were raised, how people around you are living. But there are two, as we said, there are two dinim. Sometimes to be a person is to do things, and sometimes to be an angel, let Hashem take care of it. I just follow what Hashem says. I'm not going to do it because it's Hashem's thing. We all know situations where it seems that we should do things, and there are situations which seem beyond us. So we should just let Hashem take care of it. It's beyond us. We'd be an angel. Yes?
How does this fit in with what Rabbi said about using chesed and din?
Chesed and din?
Situation.
How would you connect this to chesed and din?
Like when do you use it for situation?
That's right. Right. That's also, you don't, when do you use chesed and when do you use din? Right. That's also not clear. It's also a function of your background, your culture, your family, your own natural tendencies. Right, so chesed and din, or what we're talking about now, hishtadlus and bitachon, doing things versus just trusting Hashem. Clearly, both chesed and din are important. Hishtadlus and bitachon are important. How much of each in any situation do you go this way or that way? I don't think there's any black and white rule here. It's just you have to develop it yourself, basically. You know, are you going to be more of a chesed guy or more of a din guy? Are you going to be more of a hishtadlus person doing things, trying to get control? Are you going to be more of a betachon, like a malach person, that when things happen the way Hashem wants? I don't know, it's up to, I can't tell you what to do. I mean, different kinds of people, all good people. Some people do a lot of hishtadlus, some people do almost no hishtadlus. Betachon, no hishtadlus. Kinds of people. Everybody seems to make it one way or the other. Basically, I mean, I can't say one way is better than the other either. I can't really say that at the top of my head, it's better to be a shtadlus person, a guy who tries to get control, it's better to be a betachon person. Okay, I don't know. You have to make the choice for yourself. But as long as you know what you're doing, you know, as long as you know, this is my strategy, this is my approach to things. Yeah.
Instead of picking one or the other, can't someone like Yosef Atzadik, he was very, in terms of his shalos, he had to be, he was the head of Potiphar's house. He must have spoken to a lot of people in the jail. In terms of his shalos, he did do, but at the same time, he was very, in terms of bitachon, he said, like the brothers, they did bad to him, but God wanted good. He was always using God's name, and he had to do his shalos for him to be the head of Potiphar's house and in jail.
But I don't know, that some people claim that he got all of those achievements to betachon. There was no shtadlus. He was the extreme of betachon. So personally, I like to look at Yosef that way. I like to think of him as being the extreme of betachon. And every place he went, it says God, wherever he went, God made the people like him, and they would push him up. But that wasn't because he was had a strategy to try to get to the top. It just happened by itself, because he had the tachon. That's how I like to look at it. But I do agree that someone says, I like to do a mix of both. That's good, that's fine. That's a good mahalach. Yeah.
Rabbi said yesterday, Yosef said a couple words.
Yes. The view that Yosef was the extreme of betachon fits nicely into that when he asks the Sahamashkim to speak the power for him, which is a shtadlus. So Rashi says he gets punished by another 2 years in prison because he wasn't supposed to do that in shtadlus. Now, why not? You know somebody who knows Paro, so why don't you want to? You should ask him to do you a favor. But since his midah, according to this approach to Yosef, since his midah was the extreme of betachon, so even a small minor ishtadlus, which at 99.99% of everybody else would do, asked the Sar Mashkin to speak to power for him, he wasn't supposed to do it because he's supposed to have just betachon. So it's a way to look at it. Yes, that's what we said yesterday, which I think fits in that. If you look at Yosef as being the most personal betachon, I'm just letting Hashem take care of everything. Yaakov Avinu for sure is a person who does a lot of things. He does a lot of action. He's a man of action, a lot of hishtadlus for sure. But Hashem does help him. But he means it for Hashem's sake, but he feels that he has to do. So he does a lot of things. Everything along the way, Yaakov is very active, trying to improve his situation with Hashem's help. But he feels the shtadlus is very important, obviously. I don't know. You could claim that the Lubavitchers represent the shtadlus, that they believe in doing, with Hashem's help, of course, and the yeshivish crowd, who just sits and learns the whole day, they're more betachon-oriented type lifestyle. They don't do so much, they just learn Torah, daven. I think modern Orthodox are super extreme hishtadlus. They want to do with everything. There may be a little bit too much, you know, not enough. Just, you know, cool a little bit, don't get so worked up. There's Hashem, He takes care. You can relax a little bit, you don't have to be so hishtadlus oriented, have to do. An interesting question. But Yaakov is trying to actually pierce Esav's pride and conceit by sending him such angels that maybe they'll touch him, and that would be a way for him to get a little bit of humility and then learn, and once he learns he could become a tzaddik, right? However, the problem was that Esav didn't let the malachim come in. He never let them enter. Once he heard that the people on the gate were from Yaakov, he told his guards, don't let them in. And right away he took the 400 soldiers to go attack. So he didn't even want to hear the message. So because he didn't hear the message, they couldn't touch him. Okay. So what he says is that, he says, the lesson he wants to bring out from this is that a person should be open to learning, to get messages from other people, or from tzaddikim, from the chachamim, not be conceited, because conceit is the source of personal downfall. You have to be ready to learn and to admit mistakes. So basically, tshuva, admit mistakes. That's the problem of Esav. We still don't know, even today, if there's in the culture out there any interest in learning from the Jews. A little bit you see here and there, sometimes you see some people say yes, but so far, even with the miracle of the State of Israel, we still don't see, we had thought that the world would take notice, say, you know, maybe something extraordinary is taking place here and we should learn. But overall, no, the Arabs want to destroy Israel. A lot of the Europeans also. They couldn't care less. The Iranians. The only ones who seem to be a little bit somewhat supportive are the Americans. The Americans do learn from Jewish values. They are open more than most countries. They pick up Jewish values of chesed, of welfare, helping other people. So maybe America had a grandfather who was a Belzer Chassid. He claimed that America is the good side of Esav. It's a side which is going to be redeemed, and the Sheikh will come, will be the Americans, because they supported the Jews. And this after World War II, during World War II, the Americans were no good for Jews. But after World War II, he says that the tshuva, and they became good for the Jews and for Israel. So this is the good side of Esav, and they'll merit the real redemption. Maybe. Anyway, it's an interesting discussion, this whole discussion here. Shkach.